Alone in the parlour, the two men began the discussion they had been planning. "I see your boys are bright, healthy young lads," Lord Montmore observed. "They are," Gerard agreed. "John, however, is the cleverest. Charles does well enough, but there is something about John. He has a clear mind and remembers everything. I am making plans for his future. I can see him in the church or maybe the law." "Good man, Gerard," Lord Montmore agreed. "You need to plan ahead. If you want an ecclesiastical or legal career for John, you'll have to start thinking about university. I'm certain that your son is more than capable. From our brief meeting, I can see that he has a good manner. Quiet, but not sullen. He should do well. If you are right and he proves to be as bright as you suspect, you'll want him to go far. We will send John to the Capette after the summer. Charles has already begun his studies there," Gerard pointed out. "The Capette is a good school," Lord Montmore affirmed, "especially if you are considering a career in the church. But I have a plan that might help him on to even greater things." "What do you mean?" Mr. Calvin inquired. "What I mean is this. The Hengest family tutor their boys, as do we. The tutors we choose are men taken from the best universities, and over time, their influence on John's education could be considerable. The Hengests, as you know, are related to the bishop, and Adrian de Hengest and I would be willing to have your son attend tutorials at our homes. If John were to have the benefits of personal tutors, as well as the advantages of more noble society, then who knows how high he could climb?" "You are most generous, Lord Montmore. You are showing us great—" Lord Montmore interrupted his host with a short wave of the hand. "Say nothing of it, nothing at all. Your John is gifted. We are all agreed about that. It would be a great shame to see those gifts wasted. Let's both do our best to make sure that at least one of your sons excels in the world. The church is certainly the place for a young man to make a name for himself these days. Let's just hope that he avoids the Lutheran heresy. It seems to be making headway even amongst some of our more illustrious academics." "Surely not," Gerard Calvin exclaimed. "It's just a flash in the pan, as they say. One discontented monk who nailed a list of complaints to a cathedral door in Wittenberg a few years ago. That Martin Luther is a thorn in the side of the church, but he'll be rooted out easily enough." "Don't assume anything, Gerard," Lord Montmore declared. "These heresies even make their way into France. Switzerland is under the preaching of one named Zwingli, who is of the Reformation persuasion. It seems that every country in Northern Europe has been infected by this doctrine of reform. Why, there are Lutherans in Noyon. You can't escape them, even in our city. These men declare that the Holy Roman Church does not teach the truth. They say that the priests care more about the money in their pockets than teaching the Bible. They would have the man in the street read God's word for himself and be placed under the authority of it and his own conscience, rather than under the authority of His Holiness the Pope." "That sounds like revolutionary talk to me," Gerard tutted. "It is only the church that can give the right direction to a man's conscience. We can't have people reading the Bible willy-nilly like that. Who knows what would happen then?" "Quite right. That's why it's dangerous, and we should do our best to destroy it at its core. We must get our best minds in the church to fight against those Reformation lies." Gerard nodded his head in agreement. He didn't always see eye to eye with everything the church said, but to have